Greek philosopher Epictetus, who said appearances to the mind are of four kinds. Things either are what they appear to be, or they neither are nor appear to be, or they are and do not appear to be, or they are not and yet appear to be. Rightly to aim in all these cases is the wise man's task. I think it was my father's use of this particular quotation years ago. That's when I first heard this statement from this Greek philosopher. But he highlights some important things that I want to help you think about this morning. Appearances can be deceptive. It was Cervantes who said, "All that glisters is not gold," in his work Don Quixote. And so now you know where that expression came from. It was Shakespeare in his play, The Merchant of Venice, who said, "Oh, what a goodly outside falsehood hath." And Hamlet said, "One may smile and smile and be a villain. At least I am sure it may be so in Denmark." Byron said, "Think not I am what I appear." And Juvenal said, "Trust not to outward show." La Fontaine said, "Beware as long as you live of judging people by appearances." And it was our Lord who said, "Judge not according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment." I've entitled my sermon this morning, "All That Glitters Is Not Gold." And I want to help you think about this principle, because we need to understand that things are not always as they appear to be. The Lord taught Samuel that lesson when he sent him down to Bethlehem to anoint the next king to replace King Saul. And you remember that story. He went to the house of Jesse, and Jesse paraded his sons before Samuel. And when Samuel saw his firstborn son, he thought to himself, "Oh, this is surely the next king of Israel." And that's when the Lord said to Samuel in 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, "Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And so they trotted son after son after son, and none of those boys would be the next king. And Samuel asked Jesse, "What, are there any more sons?" He said, "Well, there's David. He's out there in the field taking care of the sheep." And you know the rest of the story. A great many of the problems that exist in our world today, in this nation, in our homes, and in local churches, arise because people forget that things are not always as they seem to be. Sometimes I say things and do things and think things that I ought not, because I forget that things are not always as they appear. Mistakes occur, misunderstandings develop, feelings are hurt, many times because we forget that appearances can be deceiving. And brothers and sisters, this is a problem because of the very nature of things and the very nature of man's judgment. We cannot fully know the hearts of other people. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, "For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God." We can't read one another's minds. We can't know what other people are thinking unless and until they tell us. And yet, we must judge, at least to some extent, according to appearance. Listen to the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 15, when he says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them." Jesus tells us that we should not judge according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. How do we do that? How can we accomplish that? How can we avoid the problems that sometimes arise because there is a difference between appearance and reality? When I was in college, I remember that the old adage that perception is reality was mentioned in some of my speech classes. I hadn't heard that adage before, and I kind of scratched my head. It didn't make sense to me. It still doesn't make sense to me. Perception is not reality. That's easily illustrated in the story of Jacob and Joseph's coat of many colors. You remember, his brothers sold him into slavery. They took his coat, dipped it in the blood of a young goat, brought it to Jacob. Jacob immediately recognized that the coat was Joseph's, and he concluded that Joseph had been slain by some wild beast. That was Jacob's perception. Was it reality? Obviously not. Have you ever had a dream that seemed so real that you didn't realize that it was a dream until sometime later? Has that ever happened to you? It certainly happened to me. We can think things that are just not correct. And so let's think about this principle for a little while this morning. I've already stated it, appearances can be deceptive. We see evidence of that in the story of the fall that's recorded for us in Genesis chapter 3. And you remember that story. Satan appeared to Eve in the form of a serpent. He asked Eve if God had said that they could not eat of the fruit. Eve said yes. In fact, Eve said, God said, we're not to even touch it. And Satan told her a lie. Satan assured her that she would not die. His story sounded good. Eve looked at the fruit. It was pleasant to the eyes. It was to be desired to make one wise, and so she took of the fruit, and you know the rest of the story. Eve learned the hard way that appearances can be deceiving. Just recently, in our Wednesday night Bible study, we have seen Joab feign friendship on two different occasions to murder his rival Abner and his rival Amasa. And listen to what Jesus told the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, beginning in verse 25. He said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence." Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Things are not always as they appear to be. It occurred when I was in the second grade. It was the first time that I had been picked as the captain to pick those who would be on my dodgeball team, if I'm remembering correctly. And so we went back and forth picking our teammates, and it came down to two little black girls. And I didn't know which one to pick. And so I said, "Eeny, meeny, miny, moe." And the next thing I knew, my teacher, Mrs. Goldman, was in my face reading me the riot act, and I had no earthly idea what I had done wrong. Ruined my whole day. I don't think I was ever selected to be captain again. And I came home, and I remember Mother was cleaning the bathtub. And I told her what had happened. And Mother asked me, "Well, now, Kevin, you know there's different versions of that eeny, meeny, miny, moe?" And Mother asked me if I said the N-word. And I said, "I don't know." You know, sometimes it's crack a monkey, and sometimes it's, I didn't know what I'd said. Well, Mama wrote a note to Mrs. Goldman, and that was the end of that. But things are not always as they appear to be. I think I told you the story that one day when we were living in Louisville, my dad came charging down the hall like a bull elephant, and he was mad, and he was mad at me, and I had no earthly idea why. And he grabbed me and he dragged me back to the bedroom, and there were my initials carved on the top of the dresser in our bedroom. And I told my dad, "Dad, I didn't do that." Mother kept a little towel on top of the dresser to cut down on the dusting, I guess. And me and my brother shared a bedroom, and I had one side of the dresser and he had the other side. And Alan got the brainy idea that we needed to know which side was ours. And so he carved his initials on one side and he carved my initials on the other. And Dad saw my initials and he didn't see Alan's. Well, I suspect that my dad explained in detail why Alan should not have done that. But things are not always as they appear to be. I didn't have a very good first impression of some fellas that became later on my dear friends. And I found out that some people who later became good friends didn't really have that good of a first impression of me. Now, I find that hard to believe. I mean, I think I'm a nice guy, and I don't understand, but they told me that was the case. I remember Dee Bowman saying many years ago that had sat down in a restaurant, and there was a hippie-looking fellow that came in, and Dee said, I thought, boy, I'm sure glad Russ isn't like that young man. He had long, stringy hair, and he was disheveled and tacky clothing, and then Dee said he bowed his head, and he prayed. And, of course, Dee felt ashamed. We need to realize that sometimes people are not as good nor as bad as we might perceive them to be. Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 24 and 25, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. Likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. It can be a humbling experience when we learn that someone is not as bad as we perceive them to be. And it can be a devastating experience when we learn that someone is not as good as we thought them to be. Think about the preachers who have had affairs, or preachers who have swindled their brethren out of their life savings. That means that we need to be neither idealistic, viewing the world with rose-colored glasses, nor pessimistic, seeing a boogeyman behind every bush, but we need to be realistic. We need to remember that appearances can be deceiving. Things are not always as they seem. And that brings us to our second point, and that is that our conclusions about other people must be drawn with care and caution and concern. We've got to avoid jumping to unfounded conclusions. The wise man says in Proverbs 18, verse 13, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. And then a few verses later, he says in verse 17, the first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. I've said this before, that's why we have prosecutors and defense attorneys in our courtrooms. Because some fella can present a really good sounding case until somebody else comes along and pokes it full of holes. I have read commentaries in my studies and thought that this particular commentator was making a pretty good argument until I read a different commentary and he poked all kinds of holes into what this other commentator said. That's why I try to read as many commentaries as I can as a check and balance kind of thing. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, as he describes the way love behaves, he says that love does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. We need to give other people the benefit of a doubt whenever we can. And that means we must guard against two extremes. Intolerance for people on the one hand and tolerance for sin on the other. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 7, verse 21 and 22, also do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. There are just some things that we need to ignore. We need to let some things slip off of us like water off a duck's back. We need to be tolerant with people whenever we can. But at the same time, we must be intolerant towards sin. The psalmist says in Psalm 97, verse 10, you who hate the Lord, or love the Lord, hate evil. Paul says in Romans 12, verse 9, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. And so we need to avoid the two extremes of intolerance for people and tolerance for sin. And that means that the proper course is being tolerant of people whenever we can and being intolerant towards sin. Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24 and following, and the servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient, in humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance so that they may know the truth and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to his will. We need to remember that the ultimate enemy is Satan. It's not wicked people. I'm not saying that wicked people are not our enemies, but they're not our ultimate enemy. They have been ensnared by the devil. They have been duped and tricked and deceived by Satan. In Titus chapter 3, Paul says, beginning in verse 1, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men, for we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived. I think Paul is telling us here we need to walk a mile in the other fellow's moccasins. We need to remember that we once were where he now is. But in our being tolerant with people whenever we can, we cannot be tolerant of sin. And unfortunately, it's easy for us to make two big mistakes in this area. It's easy for us to allow our intolerance of sin to become intolerance of people. The Pharisees were really good at that. They looked down their noses at the sinners and the publicans. They couldn't understand why Jesus ate with tax collectors and sinners. Of course, Jesus' response was classic. He says, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Well, I must move on. We must be concerned about our appearance before other people. I'm not talking about whether your hair's combed and you got the right makeup on. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our example and our influence. I'm talking about appearance in that sense, the way we appear to other people. You're familiar with Jesus' statements in the Sermon on the Mount when he says, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. Paul said something similar in Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 14, when he said, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. I don't know who said it for the first time, but he was certainly correct when he said you only have one chance to make a good first impression. Actions manifest our attitude. People judge us by what we appear to be. Bulwer Lytton said, men are valued not for what they are, but for what they seem to be. There's a lot of truth in that. We need to give some thought to how we present ourselves to other people. And we just cannot live our lives without regard for our appearance that we set before others. Paul says in Romans chapter 14, verse 16, therefore do not let your good be spoken of as evil. And in Romans chapter 12 and verse 17, Paul says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. That's the New King James rendering. But notice how some of our other English translations render this. Give careful thought to do what is honorable in everyone's eyes, says the CSB. The New American Bible reads, be concerned for what is noble in the sight of all. And the New American Standard Bible says, respect what is right in the sight of all men. In matters of liberty, we must be concerned about the appearance that we set before other people. There's several passages that I could read, but let me just share one with you. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, notice what Paul says. He's discussing the difficulty that first century Christians face with respect to eating meat that may or may not have been offered to idols. And he says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. And then drop down to verse 31, he goes on to say, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks or to the church of God, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. We cannot have the attitude that says, well, I just don't care what other people think about me. Now, please understand that I'm not talking about disregarding the opinions of others when it comes to us standing for the truth. We've got to stand for the truth no matter what other people think about us. That's not what I'm talking about right here. But we need to try to see ourselves as other people see us. The Scottish poet Robert Burns went to a church service and he happened to observe a lady that was decked out in all of her finery, but he noticed that there was a louse crawling on her hat. And he wrote a poem entitled, To a Louse. And here's what part of that poem says, oh, what some power the gifty giveth, to see ourselves as others see us. It wad from money a blunder free us and foolish notion. what airs in dress and gait would Lias an even devotion. Well, that was my best effort at a Scottish accent. We must appear to be what we are. The English novelist Charles Dickens once said, "Keep up appearances, whatever you do." It is certainly true that other people have an obligation to judge us accurately. But we must appear to be what we are. And if we are God's people, that will be reflected in our attitudes, our actions, our articulations, our attire, our aspirations, our associations. Well, I guess I'm almost out of time. My last point, and perhaps I only need to mention this because you already know it, God's judgment is not according to appearance. God is impartial. As we've already noted from 1 Samuel 16, God judges the heart. And God's not going to make any mistakes. He sees everything. He knows everything. We can't hide anything from Him. All that glitters is not gold. Appearances really can be deceptive. And that means that we need to draw our conclusions about other people with care and caution and concern. And we must be concerned about the appearance that we present to other people. God's judgment is not according to appearance. Thank you.